Radio Sayonara brings you a special musings talk by Professor G. Venkatraman, incorporating an interactive session with Radio Sai's Bishu after the first 20 minutes of his talk. This talk was delivered live on Thursday Live on the 25th of September 2014. Over to Professor G. Venkatraman.
Sai Ram, I am making my appearance again here in this Thursday Live. And this morning, what I am going to do is to share with you some thoughts which I expressed last night here in the studio, where we had an informal gathering of people from the United Kingdom. This is a group led by Mr. Ajit Puppet, very familiar around here, who every year brings a team from UK to participate in the annual Gram Seva, which started this morning. Since they all come from a country which is advanced and where life is very busy, I thought I would say something to people who are very busy and have no time for practically anything. Reminds me of the story Swami used to tell about a man whose wife told him, "How can you be busy all the time? You must give some time to God." He asked why, and she said, "When you die, you must chant the name of God." He said, "Silly woman, don't you know I am too busy even to die?" So that's the kind of fast life people are living. So, and these days, people have a new gadget which was not there 10 years ago, namely the smartphone which is connected to the internet. That is a double whammy, if I may put it that way. So people are constantly looking at the cell phone, moving their finger up and down, looking at the screen. I was wondering what. First I thought they were very preoccupied with self-inquiry. Turns out this is not self-inquiry, but inquiry about how the interests of the self can be promoted. Swami said, most of us suffer from not obesity and diabetes, some do of course these days, but two diseases of the mind, swartham and swaprayojana. Swartham means selfishness, swaprayojana means self-interest. We may deny it flatly, but the fact is all of us are affected by these two viruses in varying degrees. And how does swartham and swaprayojanam play out? They are in our mind, but for playing out, they have to go into the outside world. So we develop some desires inside and then go outside to have these desires full play. Basically, we find ways in which we can make a fast buck and protect our interests and enlarge our interests. I have been talking about inside and outside. Inside and outside with reference to what? With respect to the skin of my body. So I am thinking my skin, body skin creates a boundary in space, and all that is outside my skin is outside, and all that's inside my skin is inside. That is just a biological way of defining an inside and outside. Supposing you ask somebody, "What's inside you?" He'll say, "Don't you know? Have you not gone to school? I have all sorts of organs, starting with the brain, which is very good, by the way." Then he'll say, "I've got a heart, even though it doesn't." Lungs, kidney, etc., etc. Is that all there is inside? You say, "Yeah, what else? What are these made up of? Molecules. What are molecules made up of? Atoms." "Oh, that is also inside." "Hey, that's detail," he would say. Now, but that detail happens to be very important, because the question comes, where did these atoms come from? You say, atoms came from the food I ate. Where did the food come from? The food comes from, don't you know, it's grown on earth. Where did the earth come from? He says, "Look, I have no time for all that." But if you have time and look at all these things, you will realize that the atoms in the body really came from the beginnings of universe. And in that sense, if you look at scientists who are probing the secrets of the early universe by going deep into the atom, you will realize that the history of the universe is embedded in every single atom in the body. We have 10 to the power of 30 or something higher atoms. That is 10 trillion, trillion, trillion atoms. And every one of them is the secret of the universe. Did you know that? In a different way, the Lord told Arjuna, I am in you at different levels. And that is what Swami told us millions of times. So we have to ask ourselves many questions relating to I, God, you, in, and so on. So how is this God inside us? Do we give any thought to that? Now, why was Swami so particular about telling us I am in you? There is a reason. Swami would tell us, you are made up of three entities. He would not say heart, lung, bones, etc. That is routine physiology. But from a spiritual point of view, Swami would say you are all MBAs, meaning a composite of the mind, B for body and A for atma. Okay. This mind, body, atma, how are they arranged? Is it put one on top of the other, one side by side, whatever it is? Those who are management oriented will say, what is the organization chart? That's a polite way of saying, what is the pecking order? Who bosses whom? Actually, there are three pecking orders. The crudest one is B top, M middle, A down. That is the body dictates, mind follows, and Atma is a silent witness because it is kept out of the picture. Vedas say a person of this kind is of the tamasic type. He is dominated by tamoguna. Basically, he is driven by body instincts. Such a person tends to be crude, vulgar, etc. And in the 17th chapter of the Gita, Lord Krishna gives a very good description of people of the three types. Everything is given in detail. All you wanted to know. It's almost like gunas for dummies. Okay, next. Mind first, body next, and atma last. In this kind, mind is very, very clever. So the person can be polished, civilized, but a crook. He may be very ingenious, he may be a brilliant scientist, but he may be heartless. He may not care about, you know, hurting a person and so on. So, while the person, this type of person is called a rajasic person, when he is not ambitious, he may be nice, polite and even kind. But when he is seized with ambition, he can be ruthless. And then there is the category A first, M second, and B last. Such a person is basically called a sattvic person, is kind, gentle, polite, polished, civilized, God-fearing, and all that. So of these three, sattvic is clearly the best model to adopt, emulate, copy, etc., follow, etc. So it seems. But in the Gita, Krishna says, that's not enough. What's wrong, Krishna? I am following, being a good man, is not a good man a good thing? Oh sure, nobody says that. But yet it's not good. So Arjuna asks, why is it not good? In the Gita at least. It is not good because even a good man has desires. What's wrong with desires? Nothing wrong. It keeps you locked. Locked where? Locked in the world of desires. What happens if I am locked in the world of desires? Well, unless you open that lock and come out, you will not be able to come back to me. I am God and you have come from me. You have gone out into this creation. You must come back out of creation, back to me. That is your real home. So rise above the gunas. Become a guna atita, one who is above the gunas. And that is where the teachings of Swami come into the picture. Now, I mentioned all this very briefly, and I said, people think Gita is something that should be read when a man dies. Swami said, that is utterly stupid. The man is dead and gone. He has no use for Gita. Therefore, what is the point in reading it at a funeral? Gita is there to be practiced when you are alive. So people don't know how to practice Gita in today's world. Swami, this is the world of Facebook, internet, this, that. We can't see how the Gita is useful. So I then began telling them, just 3-4 days ago, there was a United Nations conference on climate change, which was chaired by Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General, and there were processions all over the world and all that. I then explained what is this climate change, how does it happen, and so forth. Basically, it is due to non-stop burning of fossil fuels in astronomical quantities, all to produce electricity or travel and things like that. Why do we want so much electricity? If you look at it very carefully, you really don't need that much electricity if you lead a simple life. But if you want to have all sorts of conveniences, gadgets and expensive luxuries which are not necessary, then your electricity consumption goes up. In other words, climate change is a direct result of multiplying desires in every single individual. These days, even a dog wants a dog pad. Apparently, it will play with a doggy iPad. Now, what about the cat? Cat says, what about me? Maybe the cat also gets. Poor cattle, horses and donkeys still don't have, because they are treated like second-class animals. So I said, all these people are crying about climate change. Some people say you must do something, earth is sinking, I don't know where it will sink. And others say the climate change is a fraud. It has been invented by scientists to attack the oil industry, which is doing so much good. And the politicians try to be very neutral and say, yes, climate change is there, but you know, we are not responsible for it. That fellow is responsible. So there is a lot of finger pointing going on, and all politicians appear holy, sacred, and true to truth. All that is a fraud and a put on. If there is something we should worry about, it's not only climate change. What are the other things we should worry about? We worry about climate change because it ruins the atmosphere, which will ruin the climate, and also it will cause lung problems and all that. But what about garbage and filth, which industry produces in massive amounts, that ruins the land? Land pollution nobody bothers about. You know, the cell phones people use in Australia and various other countries, when they become bad and are thrown away, that rubbish is collected and sent to India and Vietnam, because these are the countries where they will be dismantled and they will recover gold, mercury and things like that, and then put it back in the market. It's a very hazardous job. There is absolutely no protection. I heard a BBC program where the fellow climbed 7 stairs, and in a room a man is dismantling. In the copper there is beryllium. They separate the beryllium and copper and say, take it out. It's a very dangerous thing. He doesn't even have a mask. Beryllium will go into him. So this fellow says, you are dealing with dangerous chemicals. Don't you know you will die? And the man says, yeah, I know I will die. One day I have to die. But you don't have to die this miserable death away. And the man says, look, I have to put food on the table. There are no jobs. This job is available for sake of food on the table. I will do it. I am going to die. Very philosophical. So the first world enjoys and puts the rubbish on the back of the third world. There are lots of things that go on. Land is being polluted and water is being polluted. Oceans are being polluted. Nobody is talking about preserving the ocean. Nobody is talking about preserving the land. They only air because the climate change. So this is ridiculous. You are talking about one part of the problem because of some reasons. Whereas, what about the other problems which are related? They won't talk about it because all of them mean profit for the corporate sector. Plastic industry, it is producing so much GDP growth. Other industries, cell phones, people have now become addicted to cell phones. Well, how can there be life without cell phone? Young children say, how can there be life without cell phone? When they come to India, they say, This is horrible. Mummy, I want to go back because there is no cell phones here. They don't work in the internet connections are not good. And it is very unfortunate that when we talk about Swami's teachings and all that, we don't see how relevant they are to real life. And when you examine, most of our problems are caused by desires. And desires don't come from outside. They are born inside. And there are only six desires. Swami has listed them all. At the end of the day, desire is the root cause. From desire flows anger. Supposing I have desire, I am not able to fulfill my desire. I become angry. Then I see another man very successful. I become jealous. That produces hatred. That produces conflict. So, desire is thy greatest enemy, said the Lord in the Gita. And desire survives time. It will be there in Treta Yuga, it will be there in Dwapara Yuga. Kali, of course, it will be the actor number one. It will probably get the Oscar award. So, our greatest enemy is desire. And Swami's teachings are the greatest kavacham and the weapon to fight the desire. So, if you are going to talk about Swami's teachings, I believe we have to relate it to daily life in Pakaran days. Not as a scaremonger, but as an educator. For example, fast food. If children are told how precious their body is and how they are damaging their body with fast food, they will become more careful. I heard a radio program many years ago where a boy in America was very fat. He was 12 years old. He was very fat. And he didn't know what to do. He was getting angry. Then his brother told him, there is only one way to get rid of your fat. He said, what? You must take charge of your body. Which means what? He said, 1, 2, 3. The boy took that very seriously. And later on, he became a very strong campaigner. He went on preaching people, this is God's first gift to me. I don't want to ruin it. And he ranked cities as the fattest city in America, the next fattest city in America. He would go there, give talks, he became quite popular. He made it a sort of a life's mission to get people, make people get rid of their fat. Now, same way, I mean, this is a very valuable contribution, I would say. So, if we tell how delicately and beautifully and carefully and sensitively the body has been crafted by God, then we will not dare to damage it. Especially if we know this body was created by God for him to reside. He says, I have made this house. I don't want your temples made of concrete and steel and glass. I want this. So this is my temple. I want to occupy this. And that is the way we should make them look at this body, the mind and the heart. Everything is made by him for his service. They will not accept so easily, but we have to slowly turn their mind and make them realize they are part of a whole complex machinery. But if I say, I don't belong to anybody, I don't care about anybody, then we are asking for trouble. Because suddenly there is a flood, as there was in Kashmir. You say, oh God, come and help me. When you are in trouble, you want God. When you are not in trouble, no, okay, God takes care of himself. I think I'll let Bishu ask questions, but before I do, I think looking at his face, he's been writing down and lots of questions are coming up. So I'll let him harass me. But I would like to quote with two lines in Hindi by Kabir. I was supposed to study Hindi in my high school. And there was no Hindi teacher there, so I had to study on my own with the help of a tutor elsewhere. I cut most of the classes. I didn't go to movies, but I would sit in the library and read. But there are two lines of Kabir which impressed me. I have not forgotten till today. Somehow. He wrote wonderful couplets, but this one. He says, Dukh mein sumiran sab kare, sukh mein kare na koi, jo sukh mein sumiran kare, Dukh kahe hoy. Everybody prays to God when they are in trouble. Nobody prays to him when things are going nicely. Hi God, how are you doing? Me, I'm okay. Bye bye. So nobody prays when they are in good shape. If only they pray to God when they are quite happy and comfortable, how can problems ever touch them? So we are very convenient. We go to a friend when we want to borrow money. We don't go to him when he is sick. That's the way we have become. Very self-centered. The swartham saprayojanam. Saprayojanam is self-centered. That is the way we are, and our younger, the next generation should not be that way, because it is through swartham and saprayojanam we have ruined the planet. They have no place to live. We are the guilty ones. At least we should compensate for them by telling them, look, young man, we ruined the planet. You please don't do what we did. We are bad guys. This is what you should do, 1, 2, 3. And that will be real service, in my opinion. I don't know whether you agree or not, but let me see what Bishu says.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you so much, sir, for coming on this Thursday Live segment. And I was there last night as you were interacting with Mr. Popat and the youth from United Kingdom who are doing Gram Seva along with the students of Bhagwan's University here. And as I was reflecting on what you were sharing with them last night and what you shared even just now, one thought that occurred to me is, yes, the root cause of all the problems you mentioned is because of desires, be it climate change, to pollution, to all the other evils around us today. But if you want to tell this to the modern youth and tell them, you know what, desires is not a good thing, you have to give up desires, I think they will run away from spirituality. So come on, how can I have not have desires? Desires is what makes me happy. I want to have so many things. I have my own ambitions to accomplish. I want to do so many things. If you tell me don't have desires, then I will not do anything. And if I don't do anything, I will not be happy. What would you like to say to these youth who have such impressions?
That is where cunning and strategy all coming. I shouldn't say cunning. See, people always do a trade-off. Along with desire comes a matter of choice. So you like fast food, here is a choice. Would you like this? Would you like this? Would you like this? So people love to make choices. That is the way the mind is structured. It likes freedom. I got freedom. I can choose what I want. I am free. They are not free. They are prisoners, but still. So you have to deflect their attention. For example, I hear in the BBC, which I listen to regularly, a program. It comes at 1 o'clock our time. Business Daily, 5 days a week. And in Business Daily, they have one segment which they repeat, which they do once a week or once in 15 days. They take one element in the periodic table. Mm-hmm. And then they talk about it. In 15 minutes, that's all they take. They tell you so many things about it. The fellow visits factories, the fellow visits laboratories, visits fields and all that. How that particular element is so useful, how it is manufactured and all that. This is as a part of a business program. And then he will end. Next, I think he is going to talk about lead, because he gave an interesting hint about the heaviest. He didn't say heaviest element. The moment he says that, I would say lead and many others. He gave a very interesting clue. Every time he does that. Now, the reason I am mentioning this is, when you listen to that, it becomes very educative. For example, if I were talking about lead, I would say mixing lead in paint is a very dangerous thing. In other countries, they have come to realize. In fact, some time ago, the Chinese exported toys, children's toys, baby toys, not big children, but babies, literally babies. And they had some paint, and that, of course, had lead. And American paint doesn't have lead. So they said if baby licks, it'll get the lead. And lead has serious consequences. In fact, they used to put lead in petrol so that the car will accelerate fast. Unleaded petrol they have switched to. One of the things is that lead lodges in the brain, and apparently it induces criminal tendencies.
Oh my God.
From prisoner studies, they found that after, and when they saw, after removal of lead, it came down.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mention this for the following reasons. In India, the Ganeshas in the 20th century were coated with paint, leaded paint. And now there is so much of lead in the paint. And all these Ganesha are immersed, at least in Bombay, they are immersed in the sea. In Hyderabad, tank bund, they will go and dump it. So, that is used as drinking water. All of it is filled with lead. Do you have to worship God? Most of them worship God not for God, but as an entertainment. So, how we shoot ourselves in our foot by our various habits. You have a hamburger eating competition. How many you can eat in hot dogs, you can eat in 1 minute. Then there are champions and all that. We promote all these things. But do you realize how much we harm ourselves by this process? So there is a way of subtly going to something which is very interesting and coming back and saying, do you want to damage a precious thing like this? I give you a Rolex watch. That is, I can't afford it, but say, grandfather says, grandson, I love you very much. Here's a Rolex watch. Obviously, it's a very precious thing, unless bought in Bangkok. Yeah, I'm not talking of that. That fellow will take great care about that Rolex watch. That Rolex watch is very precious, but this body is far, far, infinitely more precious than anything else. And if you try to point out in a serious, what you call legitimate way, he may start biting. Okay? Then you have to say, you want kicks, you want pleasure. How many opportunities and avenues have you explored? And there, if you make them have the joy of service, they really pick it up.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point.
We have not explored. This is really true.
I think perhaps they'll experience more joy in trying to do something for other than all the time thinking about fulfilling one of their own.
Exactly, but they have not learned it. You know, environment, working for the environment has become a fashion. So if you explain to them in detail how exactly the environment helps, they don't do it mechanically. As they are doing, they are thinking of various things. A lot of people now work passionately for tigers, preserving tigers, yes, whales, elephants.
Dolphins.
How do they do that? So, you must know the right strategy. You must have different things for different kind of aptitudes. Some people would like to, help handicapped children. Some people would like to help old people. There are so many people who are desperately in need. And then another thing, they don't have to help anybody. Look at the damage caused by war. What is the cost of war? Is it worth paying? If in many countries of the world today, the young outnumber the old. If they all say, I'm not going to get involved in war, the country will not go to war, will not be able to go to war. So, as I said in a talk when I gave on my UN Day in Melbourne, peace is not going to be brought on earth by diplomats and politicians. Peace has to come from the individuals. The Peace Corps established by Kennedy was a remarkable experiment. It made people get interested in social service. They went to many countries. Ted Henry, who used to come here, he told me he went to some place in South America. He did not know the language. He had to stay in huts and all that. And then when he began to move with people in another country and all that, he automatically developed tolerance. Lot of Americans came to Bihar in 1968. Bihar was having a big famine. They joined Jay Prakash Narayan and worked with him, forgetting the dangers due to hepatitis and all that they might be exposed to. I was in America at that time, and the New York Times wrote a scathing editorial. And a friend of mine who was there in the physics department came to me running. Did you see this? I said, no. He has criticized our youngsters. What for? I said, the New York Times wrote, American youth are going to Bihar and facing the heat and drought and offering service to the people, whereas Indian youth are queuing up in cinemas and all trying to become Bollywood stars. It's a shameful for us. It was a strong induction. But that is because we invited it. So we have to, I tell you one thing, people don't believe it. There is a streak of idealism in every youth.
Absolutely.
Vivekananda knew how to tap it, and he made a mass movement. Today, there is no Vivekananda. If he comes back, he can do it again. Because that streak of idealism is latent. We have kept it, managed to lock it. The media, the market, are both locked it up. We have to unlock it, that's all.
I think that is what Bhagwan has been doing all these years. He's been only trying to spark that goodness in each one of us.
And in fact, he used to say, give me one Vivekananda.
Yes. And of course, that is happening now also. If you see so many... the youth today, on one hand, yes, they have many attractions. At the same time, when I was interacting with a few people from Bangalore, a parent, he has two daughters and a son, he was telling that his children are much more self-aware now than probably he was when he was their age. Because these days, yes, there is a lot of distraction, but there's also a lot of access to information. There's people at very early age know what is good and what is bad, and many even take to the good. Many do take to the good. That is, in some ways, you also see that positive streak in today's society. And that is perhaps because you have, I mean, you had Bhagwan who spent 86 years only trying to teach us, and all this will not go waste.
No, I agree. But you know, there are times when the quantity matters.
Absolutely.
You see, when you have acute drought, if you have a small drizzle, it's no big deal. For a moment, you feel comfortable. There has been no rain for 6 years. And one drizzle is all you have. That is not enough.
It has to be a huge...
Today, the kind of problems we face had to be treated on a war footing.
Absolutely.
Doesn't mean it, you have to fight war. You have to fight a big battle with adharma.
Yes.
That is inevitable. Adharma fight need not be violent, but we have to do a lot more and not be satisfied with precious little. That is where I am concerned. We give away time to so many things. You budget your time. You say, how much time are you giving to society? Very little. Yes. And yet Swami said in every discourse, you must give more to society than you got from it.
Absolutely.
I want that passion. Vivekananda was successful because he had a passion.
Yes.
That's the point.
Yesterday, last night, when you were talking to this group from UK, Mr. Popat asked, what would you want some of these youth who have come for the first time to take from here as they return to their places in United Kingdom? And you answered that very well by quoting your meeting with Dr. Robin Youngson. I felt that was a very, very beautiful thing, and perhaps you should share that with all the listeners, because I think there are so many lessons from that interaction that you had, which all of us can benefit from.
I can also add, there are so many Robin Youngsons of whom you are not aware.
Absolutely.
And that is a tragedy. And really speaking, before I come to Robin, our biggest tragedy is we have little drops scattered everywhere.
Yes.
If you can bring all the drops, you get a lake.
Yes.
If you bring many lakes, you can get a sea.
Yes.
If you bring many seas, you get an ocean.
Our social networking should
become
on the wrong networking.
It's not that. That's exactly the point.
Yes.
Social networking offers an opening. And after telling about Robin Youngson, I will talk about a model which is based on nature.
Wow.
To make this really happen.
Yes.
It's an excellent model, and very few people are aware of it. Nature has left it behind. See, this Dr. Robin Youngson was trained in England as a doctor, specialized in anesthesiology, and ended up in New Zealand. He was working in a hospital, and New Zealand has the public health system. Somehow, I was told there has been a meeting arranged between him and me. When I went to New Zealand in 2012, they prepared a program. Somehow they put an engagement meeting with Dr. Robin Youngson. And I was given some clue, and I went and looked at the net. And there is a YouTube video lasting 5 minutes where the man is very anguished about the way a patient had been treated in the hospital. That was the day of the surgery. And this is an old lady who was going to be sent to surgery, and he was to give the anesthesia. And he said, normally I go and look up the patient just to see how they are and talk to them and all that. He came and he found she was shivering. She was in a case of, she was going through hypothermia. I have gone through it. Suddenly the body develops very high fever. It goes to 105 and all that. And I remember shaking and all that. It's a dangerous condition. And then he immediately gave some medicine to control it. And then found that for 4 days people have been coming and making entries about her. In the computer he could see that. But her mouth was stinking, nobody had washed her, nothing. She had been literally abandoned. Only the machine next to her was dutifully filled. And he said, people are now driven by the machines. The hospital is so mechanized. You have to write reports, you have to enter data. You don't have any time for the patient. He was very angry about it, how the machines have taken over.
It's almost dehumanization of medicine.
Utter. It is treated as a, what you call a broken down clock or a car or something like that.
Dr. Safa used to talk about this, how in Bhagwan's hospital, we should never go to that extent where, you know, you forget the human aspect of
it. Not only that, he used to say in this hospital, patient is God.
God.
I heard it from, anyway, to come back to this Robin Youngson, I wanted to give him a DVD about Swami in this hospital. But it was my last day in what you call New Zealand before leaving for Australia. Next morning I was to leave for Australia. I forgot to take that DVD. I think it was Swami's design. So I ended up there and I began asking him a lot of questions. And then somewhere along the line he said, there are 3 ways of treating a patient. I asked him what. He said, first you can fix the patient. Meaning what, I said. He said, you know, you take your car, it's having a problem, brake problem or engine problem. You take it to the garage, leave it there. The garage mechanic fixes the problem and you take it away. Okay, I can understand that in the case of the car. What do you mean in the case of the human? We deal with a diseased organ, period. We don't deal with Mr. X or Mrs. Y or even a child. It is a problem. Organ is bad. We fix the problem, take it away. That's all. Pay the bill. Patient is okay, but patient is not a being. It is a problem. We have fixed the problem. Okay, I understand that. What else do you do? You can treat the patient. Of course, that's what you're supposed to do.
That is the second way.
Second way. And then the patient comes, you take a look, say a few words, and the patient goes back, cured. Okay, what about the third? He said, you must serve the patient. He said, the patient is coming with a problem. You say, sir, what do you mean? Of course you have to deal with the problem. But you, in dealing with that individual, you treat that individual as your master. Then only the question of service comes in.
Mm-hmm.
I said, why is that important? He said, people like to be given respect. In a hospital, nobody will give you respect. You have come with a problem, you will be treated as a problem, and you will be sent out as a problem. Gone. Got rid of. And then he expanded. And then when he said, you treat your patient as your master, it suddenly clicked. Swami said, see God in everyone, because God is the ultimate master.
And he has not heard about Swami.
No, he has not. He might have casually heard from one or two friends of his, but he really knew very little about Swami. That's why I had taken that DVD. And then we talked along that wavelength for a while, and it became very clear to me that Swami had inspired this man from within. He did not have to know Satya Sai Baba. God in him had motivated. He has written a book wherein he has described many of his experiences in dealing with patients, how his strategy of giving respect and compassion and real love in the Swami sense too. He is very spiritual in a Maori sense, though he is a white man. Have helped him progress and all that. And then I mentioned his name to Mr. Ravi Rudra, who is the central coordinator for New Zealand, he invited him to give a talk on some occasion, and he got standing reception. So afterwards he heard about Swami, and when I gave him this DVD, he wrote back to me. He said, in 2 days I have seen it 3 times, first alone, next with my daughter, next with my wife. It's amazing, he said.
Because the DVD on Bhagwan's works.
Which shows the hospital, how it started and what it is doing and all that. How that hospital is built. He had not heard about it and he was really very happy and surprised. So what I am trying to say is, there are all these people. Now I come to the model.
Yes.
You see, if you take a liquid and say water and cool it below 0 degrees, it freezes. That is what the textbooks say. But under certain conditions, it is possible to hold water as a liquid below the freezing temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Quite as low as 10 degrees below the freezing temperature.
Mm-hmm.
That is called supercooling.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that happen? It happens when the water is very, very pure.
Okay.
Ultra pure. You don't normally need ultra pure. But in the not so pure water, it may not have any of the dirt and junk and bacteria that we worry about. It is safe for drinking, but there will always be some impurities. And they will be present as ions. So when you start cooling, the freezing occurs around these places. The whole liquid doesn't freeze at once. Ice forms around these, what you call, nucleating agents.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you cool further, they start becoming big, bigger, bigger. So there will be a small ice crystal, it will grow, there will be another, there will grow. Then two of them will touch, then four of them will touch, then ultimately the whole thing becomes solid ice. So this is called nucleation and growth. So if you have a good man, he makes 5 people good. Another man in the next village makes 5 people good, another man. So if you plant seeds everywhere, and they start growing by the neighborhood, other some seeds fall, they grow, suddenly you get a forest. So the way to do this is to sort of trigger, somehow nucleate and grow mini Vivekananda's.
Yes.
And that is should be the management strategy. And one of the best ways of doing that was indicated by Swami. Take a school. Make sure they have character at the end of their education. These fellows will go. And what you call, establish them in society, wherever they work, they are going to spread it. So what? Well, in a country like India with 2 million schools, if they all follow this, 90%, 70% of them follow. And in 70% of them, 70% of the students become very good. You are sure to make a big change. You need a critical mass.
Yes.
Then you know you tip the balance.
Absolutely.
So, and that is the kind of strategy we should be planning behind the scenes. Individual teachers may not be able to understand. In a way we had this. You read the speech given by Palkiwala, late Palkiwala, brilliant man. And I will tell you one of his brilliant observations. He spoke when Swami's Institute was launched, inaugurated. It became a deemed university.
The first convocation.
Not convocation.
Inauguration.
Inauguration. He talked about what this institute is all about, what is Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, Ahimsa. About Dharma, he says, it is a word that cannot be translated into any language. It is a concept, it's a way of life. And he said, historians are amazed how this country, without any central authority, preserved law and order for centuries. Normally, yes. Law and order is associated with, say, states. We had a lot of states that were fighting with each other.
Yes.
But the people were law, God-fearing, and there was no massive crimes and things like that. How come? He said, Dharma is responsible for that. It's so subtle, but yet it was able to achieve. Do people know what is Dharma today? They talk about rape culture, corruption, etc. How can you eradicate it when children in the school don't hear the word Satya even once?
Yes. And in the name of secularism, today there is this tendency to strip everything that is moral, that is spiritual, out of syllabus, out of discussions, out of any sort of forums for children, because you won't say, we have to keep it secular. That's a very, perhaps, to me, it's a very sad situation where you want to remove anything that is moral and spiritual from anything to do with children in the name of calling it secular.
It goes beyond secular, because the secular is a problem we have in this country. If you go to Britain, for example, it was basically a Christian country, mostly Protestant, some Catholics and some Jews, until immigration became very serious after the Second World War. Even so, there they have what you call finer distinctions. It is not just what I would call religion. They will say, this is something, it's a matter of personal choice. It's not connected with religion. I don't care about religion. I have a certain belief system, and rules must be designed according to me, by me, for myself. You should not interfere with that. Take this freedom of speech.
Yes, in the name of freedom of expression.
See, freedom of speech has nothing to do with religion. Even an atheist, he has no religion, but he can cause problems because of his demand for freedom of speech. Freedom of speech, when it interferes with another man's freedom, is not accepted in England. In England, there is a famous saying that it is following, it is based on an incident that is supposed to have happened. Man was walking in England in 200 years ago in the 19th century. When they go for a walk, they will have walking sticks and they will be swinging it. One man was going for a walk and he was swinging a stick. Another man was coming from the other side and this stick hit that man's nose. And he complained. He said, I have the freedom to walk. He said, the other man said, your freedom ends where my nose begins. So, that was a country which had very strict curbs on freedom. Sir, your freedom ends where my nose begins. Yes. Now, in that country, people copying others are claiming I have the right to say anything. You don't have the right to hurt another person.
Yes.
That is civilization. But you can, in the name of law, say I can say anything I want and all. So, even countries which believed without any secularism and all that, whatever they believed is now being challenged. In this country, we use the excuse of secularism. Other country, they use other excuses. This is an individual sort of trait to say, who the hell are you? I am everything. Forgetting the connection of that individual to everything. If this fellow says, who the hell are you? And he is put in the middle of Sahara, he is dead. There is nobody to give him food, no bread, no water. You depend on society for all these things.
Yes.
So this business of saying I have nothing to do with society is an idiotic statement, because it is individuals like this who collectively become society, and the society goes into chaos. Then they say this country is in chaos.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, last night when you were speaking to Mr. Popat, he mentioned how when he visited a hospital in Mumbai, the doctor told him that even before he comes for examination, there are 10 people who come 1.5 hours before he arrives. And I think if you look at it, even for the plate of food that is there on our table, breakfast or lunch, I think there are so many people who have worked for that rice grain if it is there on the table.
And
we cannot just brush it aside and say that I have paid for it.
And not only that, through the Brahmarpanam Slokam, Swami says every individual who has been involved in preparing that food is God.
Yes.
In Brahmarpanam Slokam, everything is God. Fire is God, what you offer to fire is God, the one who gives is God, the one who receives is God. In this case, the farmer is God, the bull that plowed is God, the plow is God, and then the rain is God, which is this thing. And the man who buys it is God, the man who shells the rice is God, so on. This is a thread of divinity that connects. We cut away the thread and throw. You have a garland, Swami talks of a pearl necklace which is threaded.
Yes.
If you cut that thread at some point, all the pearls will fall down and scatter. So what is the use of having pearls? There must be a link. And we see linkages in the market and for stuff like that. But we do not see the divine link, which is the ultimate link. That once you tear asunder, you are shooting yourself. This harakiri.
I think once you see that divine link, as you were mentioning also to all the youth last night, you will also begin to marvel at everything around us.
Absolutely. In fact, if I were a teacher and there are kids, they are amenable to this. Say, take anything, clothes, see a divine link in it. Take brushing your teeth, see a divine link in it.
Wow.
You throw them challenges.
Wow.
They'll be forced to say, and then you have to explain why everything is God.
Mike, as Bhagwan Ishwar says, Mike is God. This
in fact,
is God.
The Islam asked the question, Swami, I shave every day. What is spiritual about it? Islam, why do you shave? Swami, I shave so that I look nice and presentable when I come to you. Exactly. You try to make yourself pleasant for others. So you say, I do this for God and offer it to God.
Yes.
And then I have to do it with a razor. Somebody made that. He has made it for me. I have to be grateful to him. Somebody made the blade. Somebody made the brush. Somebody made the cream, shaving cream. So on it goes. So you begin to suddenly see links all over the place. And that's a game, but it later on becomes a lesson.
Yes. And I think life really becomes very wondrous and
absolutely
very amazing once you all the time are looking for this link which is there underlying.
You see, we are not exposing them to that.
We are not making anyone think like this.
No. There is an enormous wonder in nature. Nature is so fascinating. You don't need TV. You don't need any of those things.
Absolutely.
In fact, they said in some places, they say you have to take children out for 3-4 days to a place where there is no TV, no McDonald's shop, or anything.
Yes.
No cell phone.
Yes.
No Wi-Fi. In fact, they say you organize a trip to such a place in America, and don't tell the children that there is no Wi-Fi, they won't come. After you go there, they are stuck with the place. So then they will swim and go into the river and walk around, look at the animals and this and that. Then they will slowly begin to like it.
Yeah, perhaps because I think perhaps we are coming to a generation, especially people in urban areas, where probably children won't know how a jackfruit tree looks like. They won't know how a coconut tree looks.
No, this is not new. In the even back in the old days, children used to be taken to farms in upstate New York. New York is a state. In New York City is the metro, like Bombay and Maharashtra. Bombay used to be called Bombay Presidency, like in those days. Children would be taken from a city, Manhattan town, to upstate New York during vacation, the farm, to make them realize that milk came from not from a bottle but from a cow.
Oh, yes.
Milk, where does it come from? A bottle.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So, no, we really have to take away the pressure from the syllabus.
Yes.
I am totally against all these things. They are stuffing the brain and not developing the mind, as Vivekananda said. This is a racket. Nobody can absorb all this. They will vomit it and they'll forget everything.
Yes.
If you life has made so fast, you'd burn out in 10 years.
Yes.
At the end of 10 years, the company will say, get lost. We don't need you.
Yes.
So you have to become a janitor. All those jobs are gone. We have turned society upside down in the name of growth.
So mechanical and
all this growth is for a few rich people.
Absolutely.
What happens is they get kicked out because of some other market forces. Somebody comes. Do you know anything thing called MySpace? Have you heard of it?
Yeah, it was another social networking
long ago.
Platform.
It is
before.
Buried down.
Yeah. I think before Facebook became
exactly,
so
exactly, exactly. Yeah. So these things come when youth, media comes in. Yeah. These are all short-lived.
Yeah.
We have gone too much for the short-lived.
Yes, absolutely. Before we conclude, it would be nice, sir, if you can reflect something on the Dasara Yajnam, because you just now mentioned this Brahmarpanam Shloka and how the Brahmarpanam Shloka helps us to see that cosmic connection. And you are someone who has had the privilege of sitting just right next to the Yajnam in the Purnachandra Auditorium, right in the front, sitting next to Bhagwan and watching this sacrifice for so many years, the Vedic sacrifice that goes on for 7 days, which will start day after tomorrow. Today, this morning, the Kalasha Puja was done. What are the thoughts that used to go in your mind whenever you used to see this Veda, Purusha, Sapta, Yajna fire being lit up and on for 7 days? What are the reflections that used to always happen in your mind?
That is a bit difficult to recall, because I was sort of always observing the proceedings on the stage and the way the events would unfold, starting with Swami coming, the fire start being started, and the Surya Namaskar,
yes,
Parayanam, all these things going in simultaneously. That is the procedural part.
The ritualistic part.
Ritualistic part, if you may put it that way. There is a symbolism there, but that never fascinated me. I took notice of it. I respected it. I very much respect Vedic tradition, as long as it's not offensive or vindictive and so on. But I was always, because of my training in science, looking for deeper undercurrents. And for me, it boiled down to worship of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Humans tend to worship, at least in this country, God in two aspects. God as a father or God as a mother. Actually, both of these are God within the framework of creation, because father and mother exist only within creation. And the scriptures say the two entities that presided over creation, which flowed from God the abstract, and the ultimate, as Professor Radhakrishnan described him, or as Akshara Brahman, as the Upanishads describe him. Father and mother come together and launch creation. We call the father, he is a male, we call him as Purusha, and mother as Prakriti, or Shiva and Shakti. These are all choices. But if I want to look at it in a more abstract way, consciousness and energy, these are the two fundamental constituents. And they are abstract. That is no discomfort to me, because in physics, any field theory, you have to start with a vacuum, and that's all abstract. From that comes what you call real entities, which are mass, energy, and so on. So there is consciousness and energy. Energy has two aspects: sentient energy and insentient energy. Insentient energy is what is there in the atom and so on and so forth. If it is there in the atom, it is in a gross object like this cup, for example, because it is made up ultimately of atoms. And that energy relationship was given by Einstein as E equals mc squared. Tell me the mass, I'll tell you the energy. E equals mc squared. But if you put a lot of atoms together, you can make a frog, you can make a snake, you can make this. That has an extra energy. That is the sentient part of the energy. For that you have no equation. But what does the sentient part do? It gives life to the atoms. What is the meaning of life? You can move, you can eat, you can grow, and you can also, the brain can work. Not every entity has a brain. Tree does not have brain, because tree is not as complex as you and me. We have a brain which consumes a lot of energy, and it is subtle in form. So there is also subtle energy. And where does the subtle energy come to us from? From the food. When I eat rice, I think I am eating rice. But there is also subtle energy associated with the rice. That also comes to me. And that is why people say food must be cooked properly by a person with pure intent. Because the subtle energy of that person will get into the food and it will come to us.
Yes.
We may not realize that. Those aspects.
Swami used to talk about this.
Used to talk about that. So,
of purity.
Ultimately it leads to connectivity and a towering force to whom we are obliged, and that is the mother. So we try to worship the mother. And there is also this story interleaved of mother getting angry and punishing Mahishasura.
Yes.
So what mother does is she observes austerities for 9 days. That is the symbolic. And then she is able to kill Mahishasura, who is half animal and half human. How do I map this to something that is more abstract and appealing from a philosophical point of view? The heart purifies itself through meditation and acquires enough energy to kill the tamasic and rajasic aspect which Mahishasura represents. The animal aspect of Mahishasura is the tamoguna. The human face of that rakshasa face is the rajoguna. And that has to be overcome by the atmic force. So we have the story of mother destroying evil. And that has to happen in our mind.
Wow.
We can't tell that like that. So there you have the story of mother. And how does mother succeed? She has to meditate. In fact, in the story of Shiva and Parvati, this is narrated in a different way. Parvati sees Shiva in meditation and wants to be with him. And the problem is created by Manmatha, whom Shiva looks and burns.
Yes.
Parvati learns the lesson. She observes austerities.
Correct.
And then do this. That's why in those days, young girls who had to go through a ritual which was the conjugate of Brahmacharya, they have to prepare themselves ultimately for marriage. You meditate on God and then be ready for your Purusha, who is the male aspect. Similarly, the Brahmacharya has to concentrate on Brahman so that when he becomes a Grahastha, he will be able to focus on duties with a Brahman orientation.
Wow.
So, I was admiring those ancients who had structured a very complicated and beautiful philosophy and brought it home, marketed it with a lot of rituals. And in the process of being absorbed in the rituals, if you're really absorbed, you slowly become transformed.
Yes.
You talk to any of those pandits, they will talk about Vedas and all that with a lot of animation and spirit and enthusiasm. That means they are growing up by doing all these things. One day they will drop all this and look at the higher level. Now, I was able to come to it by a different route, because I also, as far as the universe is concerned, physics pushes us to the corner. What is the basis of this all? Where did it all come from? When you come out of science into spirituality, where did the universe come from? It becomes a higher question.
Yes.
So for me, it was slightly different, but I enjoyed it. And I definitely enjoyed it. And it helped me to see connectivity with the training I had and the background knowledge I had. I could have simply taken the problem from there to here and say, oh my God, I understand this. Oh, it's the same thing there with an added dimension.
Wow.
So that is the way I began to see this connectivity. And it became part of my life. So one of the things I learned was whenever I entered my building in the Sevadal, said Sai Ram, I would try to say, this is actually Swami sitting there and telling me Sai Ram.
Yes.
I went through this make-believe. And automatically, whenever somebody says Sai Ram, hey Vasudeva, is how I reply in my mind. I say Sai Ram. But it comes to me, as Gandhiji said, I don't do Namasmarana, it's like my breathing. It comes automatically. That is a very important thing, a drill which I try to practice.
And I think all the discourses that Bhagwan gave, along with your scientific training, I think everything helped in this rich understanding of the Vedic tradition and their inner significance.
Anybody can do this if they are so inclined.
Yes.
I don't have a cell phone, so I do down.
Yes. But I think that is how we should look at all these celebrations, I think. And that is the reason why perhaps every festival that was celebrated and is being celebrated in Prashantini, and whenever Bhagwan rose to speak, he always mentioned about the inner significance of the festival, be it Vinayak Chaturthi.
See, there is a very beautiful strategy here. The first thing our ancients said was, God has many forms. So that enabled people, so Ganesha is my God, Subramanian is my God. Take your God, pick your choice, make your choice. Like throwing a lot of jeans,
yes,
various brands. Then, the kind of rituals associated are different. For Shivratri, you have to fast.
Yes.
So for Ganesha, you have to marry with certain kind of things.
Make Modaka and eat after.
the Janmashtami, another type. Then yes. Diwali, another type.
Yes.
So they gave you variety.
Yes.
You are not bound to one thing. Pongal, another thing. And then everywhere there are lessons embedded.
Yes.
Which connect you to the right socket. And this way, you get multi vibrations.
Yes.
And you are kept busy throughout the year.
Absolutely. There is a celebratory mode and it is sublime.
It is sublime. You just look at the calendar.
Yes.
From Shivratri to birthday and Christmas.
Yes.
Every festival has got a different flavor.
And I think that is how Bhagwan wanted us to always, especially the young minds in the university. He got the students involved in every festival in Prashanthi Nilayam.
Yes, that is very interesting. And not only that, he would privately and otherwise explain
this
thing. For example, elephant riding on a mouse, do you think it can really do?
Yes.
There are lots of questions like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Wonderful, sir. Thank you very much. I know we can go on, but we'll have to stop because the next segment, Afternoon Satsang, is going to begin in a short while. Prem and Arvind will come over now. And we've been talking for more than an hour.
Oh my God, I didn't realize. I'm sorry if I overstepped.
No, there is enough time. Raghu has very kindly given his slot, service love in action for us to dwell on this beautiful satsang that you had with the team from UK. And because it was a very, very enriching session, I thought you should share this with all radio silent listeners.
Actually, we went quite far away from
we have come all the way
to Navaratri.
I know. Last night it was from 8:15 till 10:30 we were talking. Perhaps at least some of those important things you have shared today. And I really wanted you to share something about Navaratri also.
Did I do the job?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
we couldn't talk about Gram Seva, but I think that is perhaps for another day. Thank you so much, sir, for coming over to the studios. And dear listeners, if you have any queries or comments that you would like to share with us, or if there are any questions that you would like Professor Venkatraman to answer in this segment, in these Thursday Live programs, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Yes, it has to be spiritual questions, questions that will help you to see this cosmic connectivity and improve your life, improve your relationship with society, with nature, with the divine. So please feel free to send us your feedback and thank you so much for being with us. Jai Saram.
Jai Saram.
You were listening to a special musings talk by Professor G. Venkatraman incorporating an interactive session with Radio Sai's Bishu Prashti. This talk was first delivered live on Thursday Live on 25th September 2014. Dear listener, your feedback is valuable to us. You may write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sai Ram.